Hello, my name is Dr. Vanessa Kimball, and I am a baker. But I'm also someone who has studied and researched the impact of bread on our health for many years. I run the Sourdough School in Northamptonshire, and my specialism is bread and the gut microbiome and the impact on our mental health. But I'm also trained as a nutrigenetic practitioner, meaning I look at the way that bread impacts people according to their genetics. It helps me to personalise bread. And in this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to someone who I hope you are going to find as interesting as I did. What I'd love is for you to listen and think about the bread that you bake, eat, and share with your family. Because bread is a staple, it's our most basic food, and I believe it is the foundation to good health.
It's so quite incredible about these bannetons. They have just been dusted with flour, they have a patina on the fabric from every single time that a bag of, from every single time that a sourdough is made. So they've built up almost a craggy coat. It's a little bit like dried earth. So they're just shaping the sourdough. This dough is alive. It's literally bouncing back at you.
This is what I mean by you want it to rest for a long time, because if you can't rest, you can't pull it. You need to just be able to pull it, because if you look, like,
it's
inviting you to stretch it.
Well, you're stretching that. Almost 12 inches on each pull.
That girl has been here for a few days.
There's a family outside just checking out what's going on in here. And there's a father, and he has a little toddler on his shoulders, just kind of watching what's going on, watching the bread being shaped. It's just amazing. And she's waving bye-bye. Your bread is so iconic here. I mean, people are just, they're coming as much to buy bread as they are to watch it and see it being made. You get used to it, do you?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Very wry smile.
You know, we just want to share with people, like, what we do. We want people to enjoy it. We want to hit as many people as we can. You know, like, touch as many people as you can with it.
I think you touch the whole world with it.
And that would be awesome.
Amazing is that it's so pliable at this point, and as you tuckle it up and fold it up, it builds this tension, and these bubbles are just kind of bursting out of it, almost like bubble gum.
The idea is to keep all of that, not to put too much pressure on it, not to harm it, just to keep all these bubbles inside, because that's the idea is that's where the flavour is.
Something very sensuous about the way you're handling this.
Yeah, for sure. Like, very gentle, very aware of what it needs. Like, everything you do, like, affects the final loaf. Every step, like, from the moment you put your flour and water together.
Can you say that again?
Everything you do affects the final loaf. Like, every single step of what you do from the moment you put flour and water together will affect what happens once it goes into the oven and comes out of the oven. Yeah. Every part of the process is important. Every step. That's when you get the perfect loaf, you know? Like, we're shooting for the perfect loaf that we don't get. You know, we get it once, twice, three times a year.
Describe your perfect loaf.
It will hit the oven and it will grow probably 3 to 4 times the size. The crust will have this crispness to it that can only come from being expanded by that much. It will have a slight crisp and give as you touch it, a crackle. The crumb will be very open, light, custardy. The colour will caramelise perfectly. Like, you'll have, as I said, white to gold to black in every single loaf. Like, and, you know, we, like I said before, we hit good bread most of the time. But, like, good flavour, good look, good. But, like, we hit the perfect moment when everything's perfect.
The texture?
The texture, you'll have a crisp crunch, crispy. As soon as you bite through it, you'll get that crisp from the crust, but you'll get this custardy texture from the crumb, and then you'll have this real complex flavour from the fermentation, the long fermentation.
Never get tired of it.
You never get tired. It's like you're high. You're seeking it. Like, to get everything almost in perfection, you're pushing all boundaries. You're pushing boundaries of hydration, boundaries of fermentation. It's almost like you're riding this crazy wave, and like you're on the edge, and that's when you hit perfection.
This kind of quasi semi religious cult.
Maybe. Like,
do you see sourdough as being kind of a cult following? I mean, there is something evangelical about it.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't.
It's bitten you.
New?
It's bitten you.
Yeah, it's got me, like, for sure. Like, I'm completely addicted. Like, if I don't make bread, I miss making bread. If I go away for a few days, I want to make bread. When I get back from vacation, I want to get to work because I want to make bread. I'm addicted, yeah. I don't know if it's a cult, but, like, I know that it becomes part of who you are, you know? Like, it's meditation, like, shaping dough makes you relax, you know, like, you feel good, like.
It has an almost sort of feminine flesh like feel to it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that maybe touching that is part of the whole thing, is actually kind of,
you know, you
touching, feeling, yeah. Smelling. Kind of judging, you know, your body and your mind.
And you're in love with it, you know? It's true. Like you want to be good to it, and it will reward you.
Can you ever see a time you wouldn't make bread? Or is
I
it?
Do not see a time I wouldn't make bread. I think I'm going to make bread forever. Like, I think even when I'm an old man, I'm going to be making bread in my oven and giving it to everyone around me, every person who wants it. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to stop. Like, I love it.
Your tartine has become a verb, a little bit like it was an adjective. It's tartinesque. You see this. How do you feel about the effect that you've had on the bread world as a company, as someone who has people peeping through the window, watching what you're doing? What, you know, how does that feel?
You know, we just want people to make bread. Like, we want to show people. People come here and they're like, "Oh, I've just started making bread, but I can't get my starter to work." And straight away, I'll give them starter. I'm like, "Please go and make bread. I want everyone making bread. I want to share this with people." Like, beautiful. Like, just with the books and with things like that, we've just made it more accessible for people, and that's what we want. We want to share it. We're not scared to share our knowledge. We want to share our knowledge.
How do you feel about modern industrially processed bread? Do you ever sneak a slice of it?
So, I do not sneak a slice of it. I think it's like generally like sponge. It's not like bread, as I see bread. Although, my kids eat bread that my wife buys from a supermarket that's made by a good bakery, not modern, not industrial, like, they use good processes, they're using sprouted grains, they're using, the bread is nice, whole grains, good bread, but it looks like a traditional sliced loaf, and my kids call it mummy's bread, and I'm like, it's not mummy's bread, it's Alvarado Street bread. And they're like, no, it's mummy's bread. And I'm like, so now in the morning we say, oh, do you want it on daddy's bread or do you want it on mummy's bread? They kind of get the pick, and that's what it's been called. So that said, I make bread every day, and, you know, nice bread. But my kids still want to eat a bread that's soft and sliced and like a nice, you can make a sandwich on. So really we're looking to design a mummy's bread for our kids because they all want to eat it.
My daughter and my children have always eaten sourdough.
Yeah. And so have mine, like from being babies.
And I think it's really interesting because it encourages them to chew and to really masticate. And you know, a lot of baby food is like, oh, you just kind of slop it down. And but I wanted my kids to really kind of chew on their food. It's quite interesting because I allowed my daughter one day to kind of eat at a party, and there's suddenly this terrible shriek. She was about six, and she's yelling and screaming, oh no, no, no. She bit into the industrially produced white bread.
Yeah.
And just stuck to the roof of her mouth, and I had to kind of go in and pull it out, and it was this kind of
bumpy. It's horrible. It's like, what I grew up on, what I thought was bread as a kid, like, was that, and you look back on it and you're like, it's awful, like, it's just, you know, it's just a shame that the world started making this mass-produced shit everywhere, you know, like.
And yet, so.
You know, like, also, it's every, like, you know, shoe menders, watchmakers, things like that, that all of a sudden became redundant. I think that people now are appreciating handcrafts and skills, and we're going back to it, and I thank God that we're going back to it, you know, like, it's, you know, I want to buy my wallet from someone who I know who made it, and I want to buy my cheese from the cheesemaker down the road, and I'd love to know the person who. Wouldn't it be great to get milk from a farmer, and, you know, all of these things that, like, we've lost, let's get them back.
It's interesting to watch your body language as you're talking and as you're chatting to me, because you're almost Italian in the way that you move your hands. And as you're talking about making things, your hands are moving in almost... it's like, I think... making it with your hands. Your hands are very communicative as you're talking.
I just think, like, when you get me going about something I'm passionate about, like, there's nothing holding back. It just all comes out.
I think what's kind of funny, if anyone could see you right now, they would see that you have a very kind of in vogue kind of beard, and you've got these beautiful kind of inkings across your arms, and then you've got two little splots of flour on your face. There's something very appealing, you know, about that.
We're always covered in flour. It's quite funny. Like, we're literally covered in flour. This day and age is supposed to be covered in flour, so I guess it works.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I'm covered here from
covered in flour, yeah. Yourself, yeah.
I'm not complaining. the scraper here. It looks very well used and well worn. Do you have a favourite one?
You know, these are our favourite types. Like, we've tried our way for different scrapers, but this feels nicely weighted and comfortable in your hand. I can't even tell you what brand it is or what company, but we've always seemed to get them, and I just like the way it feels. I saw you have ones that, like, have got this arch. How are they?
It's a French one.
Is that comfortable?
I had it for about 20 years.
Do you like using that?
It's just comfortable in my hand.
It feels like
part of me.
You get used to something,
Yes,
and it's nice. I've just never seen one like that.
It's just interesting that it's sort of tactile. And with the sourdough here, you're working on a wooden surface. You've got wooden boards. You've got a metal and wooden scraper. Seems to be about there's wicker baskets, and there's the linens that are completely covered and everything. There's texture in everything in this bakery.
Yeah.
The floor has texture, the walls have texture, the benches have texture. Almost as though the bread and the environment here are kind of echoing each other. Okay, third recording, still with Richard Hart, shaping bread and just putting it in the bannetons. Can you just describe what these bannetons are and what they're used for while you're doing that?
They're made out of wicker. They have linen inside them. It's kind of the only basket that really works for our bread. We have a really sticky wet dough. So the bread can go in the basket and still breathe overnight. So it doesn't get stuck. Like if our bread went into a banneton with no cloth, with no air circulation, they will literally glue in the basket and you'll have a soggy mess. Like, you'll pull it out of the basket, the bread will be wet on top. It just looks terrible. So these are what works for our dough.
They look French.
Yeah they are, yeah. And then when we garnish them, we're not just putting flour in, like shaking a ton of flour in so the bread comes out. It's there to garnish the bread as much as do the purpose of let the bread come out of the basket. It's both.
It's a generous dusting there.
And the same with this, like it needs to look, with a round basket, it needs to look like it's garnished. You don't want to just chuck a load of flour in and the bread be covered in white, raw flour. Like, really, like we want some lines of flour, we want some shine from the loaf, like we want everything. But if you literally cover it, you end up with a matte white finish with a ton of kind of like raw flour, and we don't personally want to eat that, so we stick away from that kind of style of dusting our basket.
Your bannetons, I can see the way you're dusting, you're almost kind of throwing a pattern in there, and it's got quite a layers of thickness, but also these bannetons look like
they've been making bread for 15 years.
They're amazing.
Years, they're still together, they're still doing, they're actually kind of expensive, and when you look at buying the bannetons, you're like, there's no way I'm going to spend that much money, but then when you really look at it and they've lasted you 15 years, they're kind of worth the money in the end. I know a lot of people are using the cheaper options of like cardboard and like plastic and stuff like that, but really in the long run you might as well spend them, if you can afford it, spend more money at the beginning and have a basket that lasts you the lifestyle scale of your bakery.
Rich is literally just picking up and folding these doughs that have been resting and dropping them in and rolling them around in sesame seeds. that fold and roll is very practiced, Richard.
It's also about being really gentle. Like, you know, I don't want to knock any air out of the stage. I literally want to put it into the seeds, roll it gently, pick it up very gently, place it into the basket. Like, hardly affecting all the hard work I've done.
The way you roll those sesame seeds and then drop the dough into the banneton is almost like you're dropping a sleeping baby into a pot.
I'm more gentle with my bread than I am my babies. 100%. Chuck my babies around, I just gently place my bread in place.
Sprouting black corn.
Black corn, yeah.
Can I record this, Richard?
Yeah.
Okay.
But so, like, it's not really gonna. There's a farm about an hour away from. No, about 20 minutes away from where I live, and like they have amazing corn, like from all kinds of South America and stuff, and there's all kinds of colours. There's this black one that I'm really into, and it turns out red, kind of purple, which kind of looks weird, but like it. It's made from a natural, from corn. We turn it into a porridge, and then I let it slide, even though it's bright purple as a loaf. So yeah, I've just started growing that at home. I had some kern, like I had a whole corn.
I mean, as in corn, like corn on the cob.
Yeah, but it's grain corn. It's not. Wait, are you growing it in your garden? Oh man, that's amazing. So it's not corn on the cob like sweet corn. It's so grain corn.
Grain
like,
corn.
Yeah, yeah, for like use as polenta and stuff like that.
Rima's talking to herself.
Like, I got a cob off of Megan, and like, I just pulled it apart and literally it's just started sprouting. We're going to stick in the greenhouse.
I see, remember?
Are
we
starting?
Yeah.
So that's what I
started. It's going to be great. So here in California, we grow great corn because the weather's amazing. So, yeah.
Right. So we're talking about corn and the English grain. We were talking about the fact that, you know, tea. You buy tea from India, and you buy
coffee from.
From Africa.
Tea and coffee from all over, yeah, Africa and also South America and stuff, and you buy it from those countries because that's the ideal climate for them. But like, everyone seems very obsessed with only British-only grain, and British-only wheat, although it's amazing for flavour, isn't always best for strength and stuff. So like, in my head, I kind of believe that you should blend your flours to give you the correct loaf. The loaf you're looking for, and like, you shouldn't be so like anti using grain from places where it grows well. And you know, that's up for discussion. People will agree or disagree, but you know, my idea is that if you're drinking tea from Africa or India, what's the difference of that compared to buying grain from, you know, North America or somewhere where it grows very well? And I'm not saying about only using that, I'm definitely supporting using local grain, but blending it, so then you get a final loaf that you're proud of.
I blend a lot of Italian flour with a British Gilchester's, actually.
Yeah.
I've been using Gilchester's for about 5 years now, and I use about 10% Gilchester's for most things.
And what for flavour?
Yeah, just to add in that extra little bit of flavour, and it just is a little bit more absorbent.
Like, I'd happily, you know, things that grow well in England, like rye and all of that, I'd totally support buying that from there. But like, and like, certain wheats definitely grow well there, but like, you know, I just believe that you should find the best flours you can, and you know, what appeals to you, I guess. And
your country life, what sort of protein levels are you working with that? Because you blend it, but I mean...
It's hard to say because we blend it with like four or five different flours depending on how it looks. and like it ranges from a really small amount of high protein, like maybe 20% maximum.
And that's Canadian?
That's from America. Their flour grows great here, so like it's from north, around here, North America, I would say. But like the high, like Chad believes that if you use too much high protein flour, you end up with a tough loaf.
That's
so
okay.
We just use a small amount and use a mixture of other proteins, like from ranging from, you know, even 10 up to 14.
So when I'm teaching people to bake using heritage grain, I teach people to blend. I'll make the loaves with 100% for taste purposes, so we can sit back and taste.
Yeah.
But 100%, but the I generally teach heritage between 10 and 20%.
Yeah. Yeah, we agree with that. Like, if we have a week of flour, Emma, or an iron corn, or something like that, we would stick it around about maximum 30%, because our loaves have a certain look, a certain texture, a certain idea, and we want to stick to that. We don't want a dense, heavy loaf. Like, we want to make it light, airy, crisp crust like. And when you start experimenting with heritage grains, as you call it, like, the more you add, like, generally you don't get the same sort of structure. So, like, we kind of keep it around about 30%.
As you're talking to me, you're mixing a porridge.
This is a Danish rye bread.
Tell me about this.
Chad did some tours throughout Scandinavia a few years ago, and like started he tasted this bread, really loved it, and wanted to make his own version of it. So he had a chef friend who gave him a base recipe. And then he came back here and we totally reworked it and made it our own. And then just because, like, they have an open-faced sandwich in Denmark called a smørrebrød, and it's very popular, and we just wanted, it's like a thin slice of Danish rye bread and then you topped with any kind of topping, and we really like that. So we started making our own.
So this is baked in a tin?
Baked in a tin, yeah. Lots of rye sprouts, lots of seeds, beer, barley malt, buttermilk.
It's a buttermilk, I can smell.
Yeah, and
like
buttermilk,
a pancake.
Like, adds a bit of a tanginess, and it helps, like, having a fat in it helps it from getting too crispy, like thick crusted, you know, fat helps, like, keep it a little softer. And the barley malt and beer add a nice flavour to it. Yeah.
What's your favourite bread?
Generally...
Hang on. Come back. So generally, you're smiling. It's a huge
smile.
Like,
I make so many different breads. All kinds, like, endlessly experimenting, but generally I always take home country loaf. Like, it's my favourite. Like, the flavour, the texture. And, we do a sesame version of the country loaf, so generally I'll take one of those home. Even though, like, I'm experimenting with tons of breads all the time, I always... in a way, stick to that. And I don't know whether it's subconsciously, maybe because I know my kids will want to eat that one or what, but like, that's what I'd normally take home. But I like all the breads.
I can understand taking home your favourite loaf.
Yeah.
Hey, Evan.
It's great fun.
The place is really alive. Are you happy now that I'm not some random stranger who's just kind of walked in?
No, I just love talking to
If you enjoyed listening to that podcast as much as I enjoyed chatting with my guests, then you might like to find out a little bit more about what I do. Well, I teach courses both online and in person at thesourdoughschool.com. I also write regularly for sourdough.co.uk, and I have a couple of Instagram accounts that you might like to follow: Sourdough School, Sourdough Club. Oh, and I have a personal one, Vanessa Kimball. I really do love to hear people's thoughts and feedback about, well, the books I write, the podcast, the features, or if you have any questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you for listening.